You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we discuss Randy Orton, the Bella Twins, Dusty Rhodes, Dixie Carter, Chris Sabin, Ring of Honor, and much more. My name is David, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend Alex. How are things going, bud?
Things are going well. Interesting. We'll be talking about a wide variety of topics.
And I guess I should probably change my opening here. I'm not always joined by you. You and I don't record together as much anymore. We've had some good guests on the show, but I always enjoy circling back and recording a show with you, getting your views on a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I had a good show last week with another friend of mine, Todd Martin, and it's interesting to have different perspectives on the show, not only yours and mine.
And you and Todd had a good show. A lot of MMA talk there. What's the latest? I know you are a big UFC fan. I know there's a couple big fights coming up.
Yes, absolutely. October 19th is going to be the next big show. There's a televised broadcast next Wednesday. The big show, October 19th, Junior Dos Santos gets Cain Velasquez 3. We discussed that in plenty last week, so if you're interested in anything MMA, we were a little bit light on the pro wrestling last week, but if you're interested in MMA, definitely last week's show was a good one.
Mm-hmm. I recommend checking it out, and there's a lot of great wrestling for us to discuss today. I know the government is shut down, but not us, Alex. Why don't we get started?
Let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. WWE presents Battleground this weekend, a pay-per-view right on the heels of last month's Night of Champions. Triple H always talks about doing what is quote-unquote best for business, but who can afford all these pay-per-views? Alex, are you looking forward to Battleground?
No, I mean, I think this is one of the weaker pay-per-views they've presented all year. It's really hard to do two so close together. 13 pay-per-views. You know, what's interesting is that, you know, you watch the history of the Monday Night Wars, and they started off with 4 pay-per-views a year, expanded it to 8, then eventually to 12. Well, now you got 13. I've always thought that was too much. I mean, once a month is, if you're WWE, I think that's okay. And TNA scaling back, I think that's good, too, to where they do 4 a year now. But, 13 years is a little bit too much, in my opinion.
It's a lot, and it's not like they give you a price break. I had a discussion with a friend of mine who brought up an interesting point. How about doing something like the NFL Sunday Ticket, where you could pay one flat fee per year and get all the pay-per-views, I mean, regardless how many there are. I kind of like that idea, but this thought of forking over $50-plus a month, I just can't do it.
Absolutely, and I mean, for the smaller shows, they don't need that many buys to make a good profit on it, but for the bigger shows, when they utilize Brock Lesnar and The Rock, for example, they need a lot more buys. The SummerSlam buy rate, don't have it in front of me, but I guess it came in lower than what a lot of people were expecting, so that may cause some concern. But I've heard numerous suggestions throughout the year. How about going back to an in-your-house type model where they charge, you know, less for the less pay-per-views, but quite frankly, you know, people buy them and they make money off of them, so there's no real incentive to change it.
Well, good point. For me, though, you know, I always get the big four, and I still include Survivor Series in that list, but is that even fair anymore? I mean, Survivor Series coming up November 24th. Certainly when I was a kid, it used to feel like a big show. Do you still feel like Survivor Series is important?
No. And I feel like, in my opinion, I don't know, maybe it's just me, I feel like there's a big two now. SummerSlam kind of has an aura about it because they do it in Los Angeles and there's a lot of events surrounding the show, but I don't generally feel like the show is that big. I think this year is an outlier. I think this show was well built up, but then, like I said, I think I disappointed in the pay-per-view box office. But I think Royal Rumble and WrestleMania are kind of like the big two now. Kind of can't miss shows. They kind of set the scene for usually what's the best part of the wrestling year.
Well, I'm glad you included Royal Rumble, but I do think SummerSlam is still important. At least to me, it feels like a show I don't want to miss, and it has been pretty good the last couple years.
Yeah, I mean, and I can totally understand that, but I'm just saying for me, SummerSlam is kind of a self-contained show as to where January, you know that you're going to get 4 months of solid programming that's going to build to WrestleMania. So even the February pay-per-view takes on somewhat of importance with it being the two Elimination Chamber matches. So my favorite part of the year is the beginning of the year.
WWE has obviously built the fall schedule around Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. In your opinion, before we move on from this topic, was that a good idea?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, John Cena's missing due to an elbow injury, and they're taking the opportunity to build new stars. And I'm not the biggest fan of what they've done, but I like the fact that they positioned a bunch of guys to be quote-unquote new stars. I like the fact that Usos are given opportunities. I like the fact Daniel Bryan's been given opportunities. Brie Bella, for example, is being given opportunities. So you want to see new guys being given opportunities, but it certainly lets you know that these are new guys getting these opportunities, which I can't say I'm the biggest fan of.
CM Punk meets Ryback this Sunday at Battleground. This match would seem to be big for Ryback, but do you like what they have done with Punk's character waging this war versus Paul Heyman's family?
What is your opinion on it? I found it interesting you'd bring this up. So what's your opinion on it?
I do like it in the sense that it reminds me of the old Bobby Heenan, you know, the Heenan family, where someone would have a problem with his family, and week in and week out, his family members would attack the person, whether it be Hercules or whoever he was feuding with at the time. So it kind of reminds me of that, and I do like that part of it. What I guess is disappointing, of course, is that a big part of the Paul Heyman family is Brock Lesnar. And again, this part-time star is something that's a little annoying to me. I mean, I like Curtis Axel, and I think it's kind of cool that Ryback is now part of this gang, but the big star, you know, we don't know when Brock Lesnar's going to appear again, maybe not till the end of the year. So there's a big hole in it in that regard for me. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting why you brought this topic up. And, I enjoy the feud. Yeah, it does remind me of something similar like that from the 80s when you'd have an act go through talent in a stable. The thing is that Curtis Axel isn't really being done any favors. He kind of seems like cannon fodder for CM Punk, and when he made his big return, he figured that he would be elevated to some kind of level, and I think it's a level he hasn't achieved yet. And Heyman, he's been an incredible talent since he's returned. Incredible talent.
And this has kept Paul Heyman and CM Punk at least front and center in the promotion. It kept them in big matches and big storylines. A little, you know, we don't have the title involved anymore, which is okay for now, but, I mean, in theory, again, I like this feud, but it's missing its big star.
I hear your frustration with Brock Lesnar not being around, but I kind of, I enjoy the concept of the fact that the guy can come and go. We discussed last week with Todd how I kind of felt like the utilization of Rob Van Dam, it's kind of been a little bit of overkill. Rob Van Dam came in with a lot of excitement, a lot of built-up. Fans just wanted to see him, and they got to see him every week, and he kind of lost his luster real quick. So with Lesnar, whenever that music hits, he still is a big deal. But I can see fans being frustrated that, you know, a big star is being kept off television.
The thing to me about it is, why is he being kept off television? Now, we know behind the scenes that it's his contract, right? He's only scheduled to work a certain number of dates. But what's the storyline behind it? I mean, the reason we're not seeing him until the end of the year is because, well, he's not under contract except to work 5 dates a year. That's not very exciting. They haven't given us a real storyline, have they?
He kind of comes and goes when Paul Heyman kind of needs him. I mean, that was kind of the storyline that they presented. For example, when CM Punk was under the management of Paul Heyman, Lesnar wasn't utilized to handle Punk's dirty work either. It's kind of the same thing where, I guess, Curtis Axel and now Ryback, they kind of handle their own business, and then whenever someone challenges Paul personally, I guess, he feels like he needs Brock, he kind of brings him out. It's kind of like the ultimate weapon, you know, in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, for example, they wouldn't bring out the big guns to the end of the show, so.
Yeah. Stella and Daniel Bryan recently announced their engagement. Do you like that this has become part of the storylines on television? What do you think, Alex?
Those blurred lines. Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, they're together on the reality show. The reality show is kind of being integrated into the television show. I like it, absolutely. And, you know, while I don't think the angle to close out on Monday was particularly well, I didn't like the way they kind of positioned Brie. I didn't like the way Brie was kind of performing the role. But, you know, it kind of helps get heat for Randy Orton. And, I like it, sure.
I like this Randy Orton, by the way. There's times where I don't care for him at all. I think he's boring, truthfully. But when he's just in this raging mad mood, I like him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he better is suited as a bad guy. I think he's more comfortable in that role, even though he's an excellent professional wrestler. I think he's very underrated as well. You know, if people are together on the road, I guess, and you have an opportunity to put them together. For example, you know, when Maryse was with the company and her and Miz were dating, there wasn't really an opportunity or a reason to kind of pair them together. But, I don't know. You know, there was that time when Miz was the heel and Maryse was with Ted DiBiase, and potentially, I guess, you could have switched them, you know, and maybe they would have had a lot better chemistry on television than what Ted DiBiase and Maryse did. You know, it's interesting.
Because some couples work and some couples don't. It's just like in movies. But you have a great point. Maryse and The Miz may have had a chance at that power couple that they wanted from Ted DiBiase Jr. that just never clicked. And the thing that I find with the Bellas is they portray them as heels, and yet, God, Daniel Bryan is so popular. So, you know, Brie is kind of straddling this line between, you know, she could be a huge fan favorite because of her relationship with Daniel Bryan, but they want the Bellas to be the mean girls.
Yeah, and, you know, what's interesting, though, is they're kind of transitioning to a new storyline where it's kind of the reality show divas against the non-reality show divas, and where the Bellas are kind of, even though they've been portrayed as heels, they're kind of on that reality show, so they're kind of the good guys, right? And if you watch the reality show, I think the Bellas came across as, they had their role on the show, but I think overall they were likable on the show. Yeah, so now I'm happy for them. It's interesting. Man, the whole day, I could talk forever about the whole Daniel Bryan thing, man. I saw Daniel Bryan for years, and I saw him one time. He'd wrestled Takeshi Morishima in New York and had his eye socket busted. He was supposed to wrestle in Los Angeles the next week. And he came to the show in L.A. with an eye patch on, and he didn't know if he was going to be able to see on that eye again. I'm so happy to see him where he's at now.
Yeah. One last quick point, too, is when I was growing up, I would have enjoyed this kind of access into Macho Man Savage and Miss Elizabeth, you know, which was always kept quiet that they were married, you know, and now here we have, you know, engagements being shown nationally on TV. It's quite a change.
Yeah, absolutely. TNA Wrestling. AJ Styles and Dixie Carter has been a major storyline in this company. What are our thoughts on this? What's interesting is that the TNA promised another big surprise. The big surprise was kind of the new heel character from Dixie Carter. A lot of people are comparing it to the role Stephanie McMahon's kind of taken on television, where she's kind of a mean woman to Big Show and to the Rhodes family. David, do you kind of have thoughts on Dixie Carter's change in character?
Well, I do see it a little bit, like what they've done with Stephanie McMahon. And by the way, one note on Stephanie. I'm not always her biggest fan, but there are times she's very, very good at this. And I like her the best when she's trying to be nice to you but still being mean at the same time. And I don't think that's easy. I think she's got a little bit of a quality to her that makes her able to pull that off. And I'm not sure I see that with Dixie Carter. I like Dixie in general, but it feels like TNA again is pulling something from, you know, WWE, the bigger company, and trying to make it their own. I don't know if Dixie's strong enough to pull it off. What about you? Do you like her in general as a TV character?
Generally, no. I don't think she's a very strong television character. There's a difference between being mean and I guess, being a quote-unquote heel, I guess. And I think that Triple H and Stephanie, they walk that line very closely. And sometimes I think they step over. Sometimes I think they're mean and they're not really doing what's best for, I think, that character, what the characters need on television. because ultimately the good guy has to look good at the end of the day, right? Sometimes when you don't give the good guy that opportunity, I don't really think that's good overall for the show. But right. Dixie, the problem is that you're not going to be able to get a comeback on Dixie because you can't touch her. So what is the point of the character, in my opinion? Secondly, AJ is not the strongest might guy in the company. So, for example, you know, WWE currently is doing this with a Big Show and Dusty, and those two guys are really good on a microphone. So if Stephanie was weak, for example, which we agree that she's not, if she were weak, well, she's got two pretty good microphone guys to play chess with her. And Dixie really doesn't. AJ, that was never a strong point. Yeah, this being the big storyline going into AJ Styles against Bully Ray in October, and for their biggest show, Bound for Glory, is not a direction I would have gone in, personally.
Mm-hmm. I do like the fact, though, that they've, you know, I would like when they keep TNA stars at the front of their storylines, and AJ Styles is a TNA star, you know, versus Hulk Hogan, who you're always going to have that WWE rub on him, in my opinion. And so I do like that. I you know, this can't carry the company. You make a great point, though, about being able to get your revenge on the character, how important that is overall. So that's a shortfall in their approach.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, we saw on Monday Big Show hit the Triple H poster, right? So Big Show can always get his revenge against Triple H, and Stephanie can cry, but there's no real ability to get revenge on Dixie. So in my opinion, it's not really the best storyline. Chris Sabin recently turned heel on television. What are our thoughts on this swift change of direction? I guess this is going to kind of be bang on TNA week. But I don't really like the direction that Chris Sabin went abruptly to this new character without any kind of reason, I guess. They kind of I felt strongly enough on television. I mean, it was kind of one week he was challenger for the title. Now he is in a feud with the X Division champion. I don't know. I wasn't really the biggest fan of it. And Chris Sabin as a heel, he's played heel different times in his career. I don't know. It's not really working for me, I guess, week two.
Well, it's a sign of wrestling today, I think, and just that storylines don't play out over the same time period they used to. They shift gears without giving us any kind of warning. And that's what I don't like. I don't like quick anything, Alex. I don't like quick storylines, quick title changes. I don't like quick matches. Remember, I mean, with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 2 years ago, and everyone thought that was crazy or unique or whatever. I thought it was stupid. I don't like that. And I don't like when someone like Chris Sabin's world champion in what feels like 5 minutes ago, now not only is he not world champion, he's not even challenging for that belt anymore. He's now the X Division Championship, which seems a step down to me. It's confusing to the viewer what's happened to this character, unless there's a moment or an incident that you can point to that says that's why he's doing what he's doing. If you don't have that, I think that's a problem.
Right. You know, I agree with a lot of what you said. I mean, I think there are opportunities for you to do quick title changes, and there are opportunities I think you can do it effectively, but I think this is just bad. I don't think this was a good utilization of Chris Sabin. The turnaround was a little bit too fast for you to build up any kind of feelings about him as a good guy, right? I mean, that's kind of what some of us were talking about before, is that, you know, he showed up on the scene, and we never really got a good sense of him, and maybe that's why he wasn't the most effective heavyweight champion, even though it was a quick title change for him. And utilization of Chris Sabin since he's returned, maybe not the best, right? He had a really good story coming back, two torn ACLs, he'd been out for a while, and seemingly, you know, there could have been a lot more done with the guy.
Well, and I thought he was gaining some momentum as champion. My feeling, just talking to people and reading the internet a little bit, was people seemed excited about him as world champion.
Well, we'll see if they're excited about him going in this new direction. Yeah, at the end of the show, David, we generally do a rant. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I might rant on as well. Manic wears a mask when he wrestles, but he doesn't generally when he's backstage. What are your thoughts on this? This kind of new age way to treat a masked man, where in the back, we know who he is. He's TJ Perkins, longtime wrestling veteran, wrestled with TNA a couple different times under a couple different masks, such as Puma, and now he's the Manic character. What are your thoughts on the fact that he doesn't wear a mask backstage? It's kind of annoying to me.
I'm okay with it. I think it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, obviously. But I'm okay and ready for maybe a new spin on the masked character. I've never been a big fan of the Lucha style. In fact, truthfully, I need to go back and maybe read a little bit more about the heritage and why the masks are so important, learn a little bit more about this kind of style and this kind of ring gear. I've never been a big fan of Rey Mysterio. I thought Sin Cara was a mess. And, you know, I kind of think it's funny that he doesn't wear the mask, and then he's had other masks, in, like you said, in his past. So for me, I'm okay with it, but I can see maybe, are you more of a purist when it comes to this kind of style?
No, it's just stupid. I mean, if he's not going to wear the mask in backstage, then why is he wearing the mask when he comes out? I mean, the point of the mask historically is that we either didn't know who the guy was, so he added a sense of mystery, or we knew who he was, but it was up to the heel to unmask him, right? That was always the big deal. A lot of people remember the Midnight Rider storyline that Dusty Rhodes did twice, once in Florida, once in the NWA, where he was sent away for a period of time, and then all of a sudden a masked guy who looked a lot like Dusty Rhodes appeared, and it was up to Tully Blanchard Tully Blanchard had to unmask him, and then I can't remember if Florida or Jim Crockett Promotions, but he got a world title shot, the Midnight Rider did. And Jim Crockett or whoever the commissioner was said the Midnight Rider won the belt. To accept the title, he had to take off the mask. So he won the title, and the promoter said you have to take off the mask, and he wouldn't take off the mask, so he essentially gave up the championship. And the mask, even if you don't understand the history of Lucha Libre, going all the way back to... I wanted to throw out some old luchador's name, but I'll just stick with Santo or something. But, you know, it's just the fact there's a guy running around like a vigilante for, like, Batman, for example. A lot of people want to unmask him to know who he is, right? Mm-hmm. My thing is, if he doesn't wear the mask backstage, what's the kind of the point? It's new, but I just think it's stupid.
Do you like TJ Perkins as a performer?
I trained with TJ Perkins twice a long, long time ago. TJ Perkins is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's awesome. The thing that I felt like always held him back is he's not a big character, but under a mask, he is. He does kind of display a big character, which is why he's got a lot of opportunities nationally under a mask as Puma. A lot of people remember him as Puma, and a lot of people remember him in TNA because during the World X Cup, he would switch country to country. He's either from Japan or from Mexico, and... TJ Perkins is an awesome, awesome performer, and under the mask, he's able to display a lot of characteristics. And I like the name switch from Suicide because they couldn't market that name. I remember when they released figures, they had a Suicide figure. They weren't even allowed to put Suicide on the box. They had to put the symbol. So I like some of the things, but wearing the mask backstage, TJ.
Wild card topic number one. During Triple H's recent confrontation with Dusty Rhodes, he mentioned how Dusty failed at the national level, and he got very personal in his criticism of the American Dream's career. Is this the future of storylines overall?
I hope not.
Well, it was, to me, really, really interesting. I mean, I was kind of on the edge of my seat. I mean, when he starts going into those personal digs that, you know, Alex, some people feel could be very valid criticism. You know, you realize this is all a show, but where does the, you know, like you started singing Blurred Lines earlier, where does that end?
When was Dusty Rhodes in WWF?
The late 80s.
89 is when he debuted.
Yeah.
So, how many children, you've been to plenty of WWF events, you go to WrestleMania every year, what do you say is the percentage of the audience that was not even alive in 89?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the audience was not. I'm starting to feel like an old man there, but I do think that the wrestling audience today has an appreciation for history. If your point is that they don't know about Dusty and the polka dots, I don't know if that's true.
I don't agree with that either. We've had a few times on our show Brian Shields, who's the author of the World Wrestling Entertainment Encyclopedia. And I believe he's coming out with a volume two, so it might be a good guest to have back on so we can talk about the revisions to the encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's come on the show a couple times and said that he doesn't believe that fans are as interested in the history as what may have been they've been historically. And he gives, from what I understand, awesome presentations about the history of World Wrestling Entertainment, dating all the way back to Jess McMahon and Vince McMahon Sr. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, a debate about whether Dusty Rhodes was a national success, A, is kind of a ridiculous notion, because he wasn't brought into World Wrestling Federation to be, as much as they want to say in the DVDs that he wasn't brought in to be a big star on that level. And even though he wasn't, he still achieved great things in World Wrestling Federation. And before that, before there was the rivalry, he worked for Vince McMahon Sr., Madison Square Garden, worked everywhere across the country, and was a big national star before there was a national promotion, when there was regional promotion. So Triple H is a historian, and that's probably something that bothers Dusty, is that when he was brought into WWF, the national promotion, he wasn't utilized properly. But I thought it was kind of a... I talked about the fine line between being a heel and kind of just being a mean person on television, and I don't always think that being a mean person's best for the television product, and I thought that kind of was... I think that was kind of crossing the line. I thought it was kind of stupid. That was my opinion.
Well, yeah, man, that could be a generational thing. I mean, let me ask you this, Alex. So some of the criticism was that people may not remember Dusty and the Polka Dots and what he, you know, why that was a big deal. He came to WWF at the time. If it was a more current reference, if it was a more current type of storyline where they were really digging into someone's, like when they talk about Big Show being bankrupt, I don't know if that's true or not, probably not, but if they were going into storylines like that in more current characters, would you be okay with that?
No, I think it's stupid. For example, we're dealing with someone like Dusty Rhodes, who's a WWE Hall of Famer, who's considered a WWE legend. They released a DVD, a retrospective of his career, and then now we're going to say, oh, yeah, you weren't a big star when you came here. That's stupid. Then why did we waste all this time investing in him as a legend? A few years ago, JBL had a storyline with Shawn Michaels where he said Shawn Michaels was broke.
Yeah.
But it's like Shawn Michaels was on top for how many years, and now he's broke? I mean, these storylines, I mean, I have to commend the WWE for trying different things, but honestly, they don't. I don't find interest in them. I find them stupid.
I'm grouchy today.
Wild card topic number two. I recently got Ring of Honor television in my area, and I'm very excited for this. There's an actual alternative on wrestling on television for me to access every week. Before, they had weekly television on the internet. I think I'm a little bit more open to that than some people, but I'm definitely not the most open person to that in the world. I watched Ring of Honor on the internet for about 2 months, and then I gave that up quickly. And when they started experiencing eye pay-per-view problems, I decided not to devote my money to Ring of Honor any longer. So I'd missed Ring of Honor for a period of time, and this is the first time I've seen them regularly in about 2 years, I believe. I'm excited to have Ring of Honor back in my life. And I heard the other day an interview with Joe Koff, who is the CEO, I guess you would call him, of Ring of Honor, and with the Wrestling Observer site with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. The reaction on the message board, some people didn't really enjoy it because Joe Koff isn't a wrestling guy. He's a business guy. I find that kind of refreshing. And I know it's not for everyone. And Ring of Honor kind of understands at what level it's at, and it's really not trying to go to the national level, which can, I think, kind of frustrates fans, because I think they want to follow a promotion that is at the brink of going national, and Ring of Honor is just trying for small goals, like trying to increase Chicago's house by 500 people. And I think that's a lot better direction, and the wrestling's solid. And I talked to Todd Martin about it last week. He goes to a lot of the television tapings in Baltimore. And I believe his quote was, you know, it's a steady product. It's not mind-blowing, but it's a steady product. And sometimes when you watch World Wrestling Entertainment and a lot of the criticisms I have of it, it's definitely nice to watch a steady wrestling product.
When you have Ring of Honor television in your area, when are you watching the show?
I'm watching the show Sunday, the next day after it airs. Basically, Sinclair Broadcasting buys up a lot of regional Fox, NBC, ABC affiliates, and then they're able to slide Ring of Honor into the programming. So depending on your market, depends on what time the television airs. I believe in my market here in Reno, Nevada, it airs at 10:30. And I can watch it the next day at a reasonable time. Yeah, so it's kind of a victim of not being on a Spike TV at 8 o'clock every week. But for your market, I mean, if you know in Chicago what time it airs, seemingly you should be able to build up an audience. And I think that's some of the frustration from the Ring of Honor office is that, you know, we're kind of consistent in these markets given the circumstances, and they would like to be able to draw a few more people considering the fact they're on broadcast television. But they're not getting, I assume, the same support that a Spike TV gives a TNA even, you know, and definitely what a USA gives Raw.
In your opinion, Alex, is Ring of Honor firmly positioned as the third largest promotion in the country? I mean, you think they're still at that point?
No, I think World Wrestling Entertainment is the third biggest promotion in the country. You know, I think TNA, you know, NXT is the third. I mean, the divide between even the TNA wrestling and Ring of Honor and what their goals are two completely different things. TNA, I don't even believe is the number two promotion in the country. Ring of Honor's goals are not to try to go national. I followed ECW for years, and we always wanted ECW to go national, and that desire to go national kind of imploded the company. I'm happy to see a company that's not trying to strive for that. And, you know, to watch it once a week, a good television show, you can't complain too much.
Last from the past. I recently watched the vintage War to Settle the Score from 1985, which featured Hulk Hogan defending his title against Rowdy Roddy Piper in a match that was the run-up to WrestleMania. When Piper claims he is the one who actually sold the first WrestleMania, is he at least partially correct? Alex, have you ever seen the War to Settle the Score and all the programming that took place between MTV and the WWF at the time?
No. I've not seen all of the programming, but I mean, I'm aware of the show, and I believe I've seen the match.
Well, it's a pretty interesting special. It's a one-hour special that only has one match on it. I mean, you wouldn't, I think, be able to do that today necessarily. But there was a lot of interviews with musical guests, and looking back at how MTV played into this whole thing with Cyndi Lauper, and, you know, there's no question that the brawl to end it all and the War to Settle the Score, which I guess every show had to have a catchy name at the time, right? You know, it was big, and Hogan and Mr. T, and of course Piper, they did help sell WrestleMania 1. But there's some truth in my mind that Piper at the time was every bit as big a star and as important to the company, because he really did give Hogan that perfect foil.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sure, Piper was the right guy for the right time. But yeah, definitely. I mean, Piper deserves a ton of credit for being such a big act at the time, being able to draw the interest he was able to draw. You know, Hogan was able to make a lot of money with a lot of guys, but it was all kind of predicated on the first big feud he had with Piper.
Hogan used to bring the monsters in all the time, right? Like Kamala and King Kong Bundy and One Man Gang and these guys. And, you know, until Hogan moved over to Macho Man, he was really going through these big guys. And Piper wasn't one of those, and it was a different kind of feud for him. Piper, of course, being so brilliant at generating heat, and his character was just fantastic. The one thing, though, I thought I heard a rumor that Hogan and Piper were supposed to headline WrestleMania 2, but that never came together, and Piper then had to move down and box Mr. T. I heard he was not real happy about that. Have you heard stories along those lines?
I have. And also, Hogan had a very successful run with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, given
good point.
Orndorff's his baby face, then back to heel transition. Piper's ability to talk definitely sold that show. And then later it was kind of predicated on the ability of Bobby Heenan to talk for the big monsters. Andre the Giant was obviously a huge feud for Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
So, yeah, but Piper was definitely the best one, kind of got the Hulk Hogan show running, right? Because this was Hogan's first major program in World Wrestling Federation.
Yep. Well, Alex, this is normally when we wrap up the show, but what about you? Anything bothering you right now? You want to get off your chest?
You know, we haven't talked to any MMA this week, so let me get that in for the MMA fans out there. Vanderlei Silva has posted two videos online of him basically building up a show between him and Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen uses a lot of opportunities on television as well to promote this fight. And this fight probably won't take place until next year because Chael Sonnen has a fight booked for November against Rashad Evans as a semi-main event of the big 20th anniversary UFC event with GSP and Johnny Hendricks headlining. But they're building up this show, and it's as a fan, I couldn't be happier, right? Because they're putting all this attention on this one show that's not happening until next year, but finally when it gets here, I'm going to be incredibly excited for it. And it's very frustrating when a lot of talent doesn't, you know, and obviously, you know, Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei Silva have a lot of cachet, but it's very frustrating, I guess, when talent says they don't understand how to get interest into their stuff. But here's Vanderlei, who's outworking a lot of younger talent by putting up these videos and investing in the show this many months out, and it's a good thing. I like it. I just wish more people wouldn't take this direction. You know, just say that, you know, I can get interest in my events, and it's possible.
Very good. Before we go, Alex, tell people where they can see you on social media.
AlexGoff84 is kind of my thing. So if you go to Twitter, @AlexGoff84, Facebook, AlexGoff84, and shoot me an email at alex@onlineworldofwrestling.com. If you got any questions or any you disagree with me, agree with me, you can do that as well, and I'll reply to you there. So that's about it. And it was nice recording with you this week, David. Next week, hopefully, I'll have a good name guest on here. If not, you'll hear one of my friends on here. But actually, this guy's one of my friends too. But hopefully, we're able to get a good name guest on here next week, and we'll talk to you another time, David. It was nice.
You got it. I really always enjoy recording with you, and I want to remind people to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also post directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
This is Alex.
We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well that's okay.